9. Martin materialized without any warning or entrance music. He hovered in midair, his feet pulled up beneath him to leave as much clearance above the floor as possible. He waved his staff threateningly with his left hand, ready to cast any one of a number of defensive spells he had at the ready. He held his right hand over his eyes like a child at a scary movie they'd mistakenly thought they were old enough to handle, using his semi-spread fingers to filter out anything he didn't really want to see. Instead of an attacker of any kind, Martin saw only the interior of Gary's home, Skull Gullet Cave. He saw no sign of Gary nor anybody else, but Martin knew Gary well enough not to take his absence for granted. He hovered, spinning slowly, guarding for an attack that never came. Finally, he removed his hand from his eyes, stretched his legs out, and landed.
"Hey, Gary!"
Martin shouted.
"You home?"
"Back here in the bedroom,"
Gary's distant voice replied.
"Come on back."
Martin walked past the overbuilt couch and recliners, past the rudimentary kitchen, and down the hallway that led to the bathroom and bedroom. He found the bedroom door slightly ajar and heard hushed voices.
"Is this satisfactory, master?"
"Yes, but next time, remember to put your gloves on first."
Martin put his hand, fingers slightly spread, back over his eyes and pushed the door open. Gary's bedroom was much as Martin remembered it, a very large, modern bed covered with disheveled sheets and the black bedspread sat in a room devoid of any decorative wall hangings. At the foot of the bed, Gary stood, wearing only a pair of plain briefs. Martin didn't know if he was surprised or relieved to see that they weren't brightly colored and festooned with the logo of some superhero. A black t-shirt hung limply from Gary's hand. Hubert stood nearby, wearing the jacket and bow tie of a formal tuxedo with tails over his customary filth-colored tunic and breeches. He was pulling on a pair of white cotton gloves, making them substantially less white in the process.
"Oh, Gary, please tell me this isn't what it looks like."
Hubert said,
"The master is training me to be his butler."
"Butler," Gary said. "I'm training him to be my butler."
"Yeah,"
Martin said.
"That's what it looks like."
"The master says that if I can prove my worth and loyalty, he may teach me magic. In the meantime, he's paying me a fine wage."
"And working for me will be a lot more pleasant than his previous job."
"Indeed,"
Hubert said.
"After I'm finished helping the master get dressed, I'm to sort his underwear, culling out any pairs that are too damaged to continue using."
Gary laughed.
"Yeah, okay, Hubert. Later on, we're going to have a conversation about butler-master confidentiality. Why don't you hand me my robe, then go get to work on breakfast? Martin, would you like Hubert to make you anything?"
"Would I like for Hubert to make food for me to eat? No. No, thank you,"
Hubert said.
"Very good. I know which black robe would the master prefer to wear today?"
Gary said,
"You pick one. I trust you."
Hubert reached into the closet and grabbed one from the middle of a cluster of identical black robes, then handed it to Gary.
"Is this one to your liking, sir?"
"Yes, thanks. That'll be all, Hubert."
Hubert bowed deeply and left the room. Gary sat down on the foot of the bed and started threading a pair of Levi's on over his skeletal prosthetic leg.
"You've hired a man to help you dress yourself?" Martin asked. "That's got to be the laziest thing I've ever heard."
"Not at all. I've gone to the trouble of hiring a man to help me dress. You haven't gotten around to that yet. It looks like you could use the help." "What the hell happened to your robe?"
Martin looked down at his shredded, tattered robe, still shedding sequins every time he moved.
"I was attacked by birds. We'll discuss that later. Gary, what you're doing to Hubert, it's not right."
"I'm giving him a job. Look, he brought up the idea of learning magic from me. You saw me telling him that it wasn't going to happen. I got to thinking about how desperate he seemed to find a better line of work, and it occurred to me that I couldn't make him a wizard, but I could come up with something better than being a dung sifter. But, hey, maybe I'm wrong. If you think he'd be better off in the dung pile, or the dung fields, or the siftery, wherever it is they do the sifting, feel free to go fire him.
I'm not going to fire him, but this doesn't sit well with me.
Gary pulled on his black robe as he and Martin made their way from the bedroom back to the living room. As they emerged from the hallway and the kitchen came into view, they saw Hubert closing the door to the freezer, holding a frozen breakfast burrito, still in its plastic wrapper. He pulled on the wrapper's flat, heat-sealed end with both hands. Gary said,
Hubert, don't bother unwrapping it. Just put a hole in the wrapper, heat it up, and put the whole thing on the plate.
Yes, master.
Hubert tugged again at the wrapper, straining from the exertion, then lifted the wrapper to his mouth and bit a hole in its end. Martin noticed dark smudges on the wrapper where it had been touched by Hubert's hands and lips.
So, Gary asked, what brings you to my home? I don't remember inviting you over.
I'm calling an emergency meeting.
Cool. When and where?
Here? Any second now?
Convenient. I don't remember agreeing to that.
You didn't. I'll explain when everyone's here. I wouldn't have pulled a stunt like this if it weren't important.
Martin held up his left hand, palm upward.
Nomita Grupo Gvin.
A glowing orb appeared in Martin's hand. He said,
okay. Gary's decent and it's safe. Come on over.
In quick succession, Tyler, Jeff, and Roy appeared, all floating in midair with their legs pulled up protectively and their wands and staffs outstretched to launch a quick counterattack.
Relax, Martin said. He didn't know we were coming.
The wizards dropped lightly to the ground and dropped their guards. Gary looked over the group, took a moment to do some mental math, and reached for his staff. A long, gnarled piece of dark wood with action figures of the members of KISS lashed to its top.
I might still have time to get something ready before Gwen, Philip, and Britt get here.
Martin held up a hand to stop him. Philip and Britt aren't coming. Gwen's deliberately late to make it clear that she's not happy with me right now.
Gwen appeared. She looked around the room. Only after she'd made eye contact and exchanged friendly greetings with every other wizard did she deign to look at Martin.
Where are Britt and Philip? I didn't invite them. Why not? Gwen asked. We'll get to that.
Since you're all here, Gary said, how about some snacks?
Roy said, sure.
Martin said, none for me, thanks.
Gary clapped twice in quick succession.
Hubert said,
yes, master, what should I make for your guests?
All of the wizards turned and looked at Hubert, in his tuxedo jacket and mottled white and brown cotton gloves. Tyler asked,
Hubert, what are you doing?
Hubert puffed his chest out with pride.
The master has agreed to let me be his butler.
It's butler, Hubert, said Gary.
Yes, that! Who would like something to eat? It shouldn't take me long to whip something up.
The entire group made immediate, emphatic statements to the effect that they were not hungry. Gary shook his head.
Okay, Hubert, false alarm. How's my burrito coming?
I'll put it in your demonic heat box as instructed. It should be done soon.
Good. We have wizard secrets to discuss. You can go outside for a break.
Hubert backed out of the room, exiting to the vestibule that led to the outside world, bowing and closing the door as he left. Jeff looked utterly disgusted.
He came to you to learn magic, and you're using him as a servant?
A properly microwaved burrito is kind of magical. Besides, there's no shame in being a butler.
He's not a butler,
Tyler said.
A butler oversees the household staff. Hubert's your valet. They were also sometimes called a gentleman's gentleman. They tended to a nobleman's personal needs. The butler managed the household staff.
Oh, Gary said. I'm still going to call him my butler. Butlers are just cooler. Like that, well, what's his name? Jeeves.
Tyler squeezed his eyes shut.
Jeeves was Bertie Wooster's valet, not his butler.
Gwen put a hand on Tyler's shoulder.
You understand that nobody cares, right?
Martin cleared his throat.
Let's get down to business. I suppose you're all wondering why I called you here.
Roy raised his hand, but didn't wait to be called on.
Was it so you didn't have a chance to say, I suppose you're all wondering why I called you here?
I have always wanted to say that, but no.
Gwen said,
I assumed it was because you wanted to apologize to me.
I didn't just call you, I called everybody.
I assumed you wanted to apologize in front of everybody.
Why?
Gary asked.
What did he do?
Gwen glared at Martin.
He knows.
Gary smiled and stepped closer to Gwen.
Hey, if you and Martin are on the outs, just let me say that if you decided to give me a whirl, I promise I'd never have any intention of marrying you.
Gwen rolled her eyes. I'm leaving.
Wait, Martin said. This is important. It's not about you and me. It's about Philip.
Jeff raised his hand and spoke without waiting to be called on.
Is that why you didn't invite him or Britt? So you could talk smack about Philip behind his back? Because you should know I'm totally going to tell him everything you say.
No, it's not that. And please don't tell him. In fact, I picked Gary's place for this meeting because I knew it was one place that neither he nor Britt would ever turn up on their own. There's no way either of them would ever come here without a damn good reason.
Hey, Gary said, that's hurtful.
That doesn't mean it's not true. I wanted to talk to you all because I believe Philip is in danger. He's been attacked twice now, and he won't take it seriously.
Gwen asked, why not?
He doesn't believe he's been attacked.
They can't have been very vicious attacks then,
Roy said.
They weren't, but they're escalating, and I know who's behind it.
Okay, Roy said. That sounds serious. Tell us exactly what happened.
Well, okay, Martin said. The first time, there was a knock on the door. When Philip opened it, there was nobody there, but some kids were walking away with a package that was meant for him, and I saw someone lurking in the shadows across the street.
Gwen said, I remember that. That was last night.
So you can back him up on this?
Roy asked. No, Gwen said flatly. I didn't see any of that stuff. I just remember him arguing with Philip about it. Wasn't the guy across the street someone wearing a Star Wars costume?
Philip said he looked like a Jawa, but he didn't even see the guy.
Martin flapped his hands away as if shooing off a bee.
Okay, fine. Yeah, I admit that one's not very convincing. But just now, in Atlantis, I saw the same guy, and he definitely attacked Philip.
Okay, Roy said. What did he do?
You know the kids' game Mousetrap? He made a real-life version of that to trap Philip.
So he's captured Philip? Gwen asked.
No.
So it didn't work?
No, it worked. The cage came down on him, but he was able to get out really easily. Then I chased the guy. He had a head like a goblin. I'm pretty sure it was a mask. That, or he's just real ugly. Anyway, he sicked a flock of birds on me.
Tyler turned to Gwen.
Man, when you two are fighting, he really goes off the rails, doesn't he?
Gwen said, Martin, if you really believe that Philip is in danger, shouldn't you be talking to him?
I did. He doesn't believe me. But just say I'm right, and Philip is being attacked. They're subtle and non-lethal attacks, but he's being attacked nonetheless by a magic user. I met him. Look at what he did to my robe.
Yeah, Gwen said, I noticed. And I'm not going to fix that for you.
I didn't ask. Bigger fish to fry. While the attacks haven't been dangerous yet, that we know of, do we want to wait around and wait to see if that changes?
Tyler held up a finger to stop Martin.
Let me see if I understand. You're saying that a shadowy figure has attacked Philip twice, in ways that are so subtle and indirect that he doesn't recognize them as attacks, even after you pointed them out to him. Is that the gist of it?
Yes.
And what do you want from us?
Martin looked at the others as if they'd lost their minds.
To help me stop it!
Stop what? Roy asked. The almost nothing that probably isn't happening? It seems like you should be able to handle that yourself. We're not the ones to help with this anyway. If Philip's the one in danger, he's the one you should be talking to. And if he won't listen, Britt the Younger would be the next logical choice.
Yeah, but I already talked to Philip and all he did was mock me. If I go to Britt the Younger, what's she gonna do? First thing is she'll tell Philip, then they'll both mock me.
So you came to us so we could mock you?
Gary asked.
No, I came to you because I hoped, foolishly, that at least one of you might want to help me.
I'll help you, Gwen said.
Really?
Oh, yeah. I'll give you the best kind of help there is. A suggestion.
That's the best kind of help?
Yes, from my point of view. Because it lets me feel like I did something without putting out much effort, anyway. I suggest that you're a time traveler, Use that to your advantage. Go forward in time and ask some future version of Philip who was attacking him and why. If it turns out he was in danger, he'll be happy to tell you, so that you can come back and save him. If he isn't in danger, future him will get a good laugh out of it. Either way, you'll have helped him.
Martin started to respond, but stopped short when the wizards all heard shouting at the outer door that opened from Gary's antechamber, with its large stone altar to the mouth of Skull Gullet Cave. Gary called out, "Hubert!" Hubert hustled in from the entrance and bowed deeply.
"Master, I am sorry."
"What is it?"
"People to speak to you, Master. I told them to go away, but they refused."
"What do they want?"
"I'd much rather they told you."
Gary crossed through his antechamber, and all of the other wizards followed. Three young men from the village were standing outside the ornately carved stone door. One was a hog mucker, another was a fish gutter, and the third was a hide scraper at the local tannery. Martin didn't know any of their names, but he recognized their smells.
"What can I do for you?" Gary asked.
All three of the young men fell to their knees. The hide scraper pleaded,
"Train us, O Master, like you're training Hubert."
Gary pinched the bridge of his nose.
"Hubert, didn't I order you not to tell anybody about our arrangement?"
"Yes, Master, you did."
"And did you tell anybody?"
"I might have mentioned it to someone, Master."
"And by might have, you mean..."
"I definitely did, Master."
"And by someone, you mean..."
"Them, Master."
Hubert pointed at the three men on their knees, beseeching Gary to train them.
"So you definitely told these three men about our arrangement after I ordered you not to?"
"I wouldn't say that, Master."
"But it's true."
"Oh, yes."